when the fairies left Kor, that lane was blocked forever with great impassable rocks. And there stands of a surety the cottage empty and the garden bare to this day, and will do until long after the faring forth, when, if all goes well, the roads through Arvalin to Valinor shall be thronged with the sons and daughters of men. But seeing that no children came there for refreshment and delight, sorrow and grayness spread amongst them, and men ceased almost to believe in or think of the beauty of the Eldar and the glory of the Valar, till one came from the great lands and besought us to relieve the darkness. Now there is, alas, no safe way for children from the great lands hither, but merrily Turinki hearkened to his boon and chose Lindo, my husband, to devise some plan of good. Now Lindo and I, Vire, had taken under our care the children, the remainder of those who found Kor and remained with the Eldar forever, and so here we builded of good magic this cottage of lost play. And here old tales, old songs and elfin music are treasured and rehearsed. Ever and anon our children fare forth again to find the great lands, and go about among the lonely children, and whisper to them at dusk in early bed by nightlight and candle flame, or comfort those that weep. Some, I am told, listen to the complaints of those that are punished or chidden, and hear their tales, and feign to take their part. And this seems to me a quaint and merry service. Yet all whom we send return not, and that is great grief to us, for it is by no means out of small love that the Eldar held children from Kor, but rather of thought for the homes of men. Yet in the great lands, as you know well, there are fair places, and lovely regions of much allurement, wherefore it is only for the great necessity that we adventure any of the children that are with us. Yet the most come back hither, and tell us many stories, and many sad things of their journeys. And now I have told most of what is to tell of the cottage of lost play. Then Eriol said, Now these are tidings sad and yet good to hear, and I remember me of certain words that my father spake in my early boyhood. It had long, said he, been a tradition in our kindred that one of our father's fathers would speak of a fair house and magic gardens, of a wondrous town, and of a music full of all beauty and longing, and these things, he said, he had seen and heard as a child, though how and where was not told. Now all his life was he restless, as if a longing half expressed for unknown things dwelt within him, and it is said that he died among rocks on a lonely coast on a night of storm, and moreover that most of his children and their children since have been of a restless mind, and methinks I know now the truth of the matter. And Vire said that 'twas like to be that one of his kindred had found the rocks of Eldamar in those old days. Notes 1. Gnomes, the second kindred, the Noldoli, later Noldor. For the use of the word gnomes, see page 43, and for the linguistic distinction made here, see the music of the Ainur, side 2. 2. The great lands are the lands east of the great sea. The term Middle Earth is never used in the Lost Tales, and in fact does not appear until writings of the 1930s. 3. In both manuscripts, the words of all the Eldar are followed by, For of most noble there were none, seeing that to be of the blood of the Eldar is equal and sufficient. But this was struck out in the second manuscript. 4. The original reading was the Great Tirion, changed to the Great Tower. 5. This sentence from A Son, Meseems, replaced in the original manuscript an earlier reading, Shall it be of Eärendil the Wanderer, who alone of the sons of men has had great traffic with the Valar and Elves, who alone of their kindred has seen beyond Taniquetil, even he who sails forever in the firmament? 6. The original reading was before the days of, changed to in the first days of, and then to the reading given. 7. This last phrase was an addition to the second manuscript. Changes made to names in the Cottage of Lost Play. The names were at this time in a very fluid state, reflecting in part the rapid development of the languages that was then taking place. Changes were made to the original text, and further changes at different times to the second text, but it seems unnecessary in the following notes to go into the detail of when and where the changes were made. The names are given in the order of their occurrence in the tale. Dor Fidwen, capital D-O-R, capital F-A-I-D-W-E-N, the gnomish name of Tol Eressia, was changed many times. Gar Eglos, capital G-A-R, capital E-G-L-O-S, changed to Dor Edloth, capital D-O-R, capital E-D-L-O-T-H, changed to Dor Usgwen, capital D-O-R, capital U-S-G-W-E-N, changed to Dor Uswen, capital D-O-R, capital U-S-W-E-N, changed to Dor Fidwen. Mar Vanwa Tjaljeva, capital M-A-R, capital V-A-N-W-A, capital T-Y-A-L-I-E-V-A. In the original text, a space was left for the Elvish name, subsequently filled in as Mar Vanwa Tjaljeva, capital T-A-L-I-E-V-A. Great Lands. Throughout the tale, Great Lands is an emendation of Outer Lands, when the latter was given a different meaning, lands west of the Great Sea. Wingelot, capital W-I-N-G-I-L-O-T, changed from Wingelot, capital W-I-N-G-E-L-O-T. Gar Lossion, capital G-A-R, capital L-O-S-S-I-O-N, changed from Losgar, capital L-O-S-G-A-R. Koromas, capital K-O-R-O-M-A-S, changed from Kormas, capital K-O-R-M-A-S. Meril E. Turinki, capital M-E-R-I-L hyphen I hyphen capital T-U-R-I-N-Q-I. The first text has only Turinki, with in one place a space left for a personal name. Inwe, capital I-N-W-E, changed from Ing, capital I-N-G, at each occurrence. Inwithiel, capital I-N-W-I-T-H-I-E-L, changed from Gimgithil, capital G-I-M, capital G-I-T-H-I-L, which was in turn changed from Githil. Ingil, capital I-N-G-I-L, changed from Ingilmo, capital I-N-G-I-L-M-O. Valwe, capital V-A-L-W-E, changed from Manwe, capital M-A-N-W-E. It seems possible that Manwe, as the name of Vire's father, was a mere slip. Noldorin, capital N-O-L-D-O-R-I-N, the original reading was Noldorin whom the gnomes name Golriel, capital G-O-L-D-R-I-E-L. Golriel was changed to Golthadriel, capital G-O-L-T-H-A-D-R-I-E-L, and then the reference to the gnomish name was struck out, leaving only Noldorin. Tulkastor, capital T-U-L-K-A-S-T-O-R, changed from Tulkase, capital T-U-L-K-A-S-S-E, changed from Turenbor, capital T-U-R-E-N-B-O-R. Solosimpi, capital S-O-L-O-S-I-M-P-I, changed from Solosimpe, capital S-O-L-O-S-I-M-P-E, at each occurrence. Lindelos, capital L-I-N-D-E-L-O-S, changed from Lindeloxe, capital L-I-N-D-E-L-O-K-S-E, changed from Lindelocte, capital L-I-N-D-E-L-O-K-T-E, singing cluster, Glingol, capital G-L-I-N-G-O-L. Teleli, capital T-E-L-E-L-L-I, changed from Telele, capital T-E-L-E-L-L-E. Arvalin, capital A-R-V-A-L-I-N, changed from Harmalin, capital H-A-R-M-A-L-I-N, changed from Harwalin, capital H-A-R-W-A-L-I-N. Commentary on the Cottage of Last Play. The story of Ariel the Mariner was central to my father's original conception of the mythology. In those days, as he recounted long after in a letter to his friend Milton Waldman, the primary intention of his work was to satisfy his desire for a specifically and recognizably English literature of fairy. Footnote, the letters of J.R.R. Tolkien, edited by Humphrey Carpenter, 1981, page 144. The letter was almost certainly written in 1951. End of footnote. I was, from early days, grieved by the poverty of my own beloved country. It had no stories of its own, bound up with its tongue and soil, not of the quality that I sought, and found as an ingredient in legends of other lands. There was Greek and Celtic and Romance, Germanic, Scandinavian, and Finnish, which greatly affected me, but nothing English, save impoverished chapbook stuff. In his earliest writings, the mythology was anchored in the ancient legendary history of England, and more than that, it was peculiarly associated with certain places in England. Ariel, himself close kin of famous figures in the legends of northwestern Europe, came at last on a voyage westward over the ocean to Tolaresia, the lonely isle where elves dwelt, and from them he learned the lost tales of Elfinesse. But his role was at first to be more important in the structure of the work than, what it afterwards became, simply that of a man of later days who came to the land of the fairies and there acquired lost or hidden knowledge, which he afterwards reported in his own tongue. At first, Ariel was to be an important element in the fairy history itself, the witness of the ruin of elvish Tolaresia. The element of ancient English history or historical legend was at first not merely a framework isolated from the great tales that afterwards constituted the Silmarillion, general, but an integral part of their ending. The elucidation of all this, so far as elucidation is possible, must necessarily be postponed to the end of the tales, but here something at least must be said of the history of Ariel up to the time of his coming to Tolaresia, and of the original significance of the Lonely Isle. The Ariel story is, in fact, among the knottiest and most obscure matters in the whole history of Middle-earth and Aman. My father abandoned the writing of the lost tales before he reached their end, and when he abandoned them, he had also abandoned his original ideas for their conclusion. Those ideas can indeed be discerned from his notes, but the notes were for the most part penciled at furious speed, the writing now rubbed and faint, and in places, after long study, scarcely decipherable, on little slips of paper, disordered and dateless, or in a little notebook in which, during the years when he was composing the lost tales, he jotted down thoughts and suggestions. See The Flight of the Noldali, side 6. The common form of these notes on the Ariel or English element is that of short outlines, in which salient narrative features, often without clear connection between them, are set down in the manner of a list, and they vary constantly among themselves. In what must be, at any rate, among the very earliest of these outlines, found in this little pocketbook and headed story of Ariel's life, the mariner who came to Tolaresia is brought into relation with the tradition of the invasion of Britain by Hengest and Horsa in the 5th century A.D. This was a matter to which my father gave much time and thought. He lectured on it at Oxford and developed certain original theories, especially in connection with the appearance of Hengest in Beowulf. Footnote, J.R.R. Tolkien, Finn and Hengest, edited by Alan Bliss, 1982. End of footnote. From these jottings we learn that Ariel's original name was Ottor, but that he called himself Waifre, an old English word meaning restless, wandering, and lived a life on the waters. His father was named Eoch, a word of the old English poetic vocabulary meaning horse, and Eoch was slain by his brother Beorn, in old English warrior, but originally meaning bear, as does the cognate word Björn in Old Norse. Compare Beorn, the shape-changer in The Hobbit. Eoch and Beorn were the sons of Hedin, the leather and fur-clad, and Hedin, like many heroes of northern legend, traced his ancestry to the god Woden. In other notes there are other connections and combinations, and since none of this story was written as a coherent narrative, these names are only of significance as showing the direction of my father's thought at that time. Ottor Waifre settled on the island of Heligoland in the North Sea, and he wedded a woman named Quinn, Old English, woman, wife. They had two sons named after his father, Hengest and Horsa, to avenge Eoch. Hengest is another Old English word for horse. Then sea longing gripped Ottor Waifre. He was a son of Earendel, born under his beam. If a beam from Earendel fall on a child newborn, he becomes a child of Earendel and a wanderer. So also, in the Cottage of Lost Play, Ariel is called, both by the author and by Lindo, a son of Earendel. After the death of Quen, Ottor left his young children. Hengest and Horsa avenged Eoch and became great chieftains, but Ottor Waifre set out to seek and find Tol Eressia, here called in Old English Seon Kutaholm, the Unknown Island. Various things are told in these notes about Ariel's sojourn in Tol Eressia, which do not appear in the Book of Lost Tales, but of these I need here only refer to the statements that Ariel adopted the name of Angol, and that he was named by the gnomes, the later Noldor, see below, Angol after the regions of his home. This certainly refers to the ancient homeland of the English before their migration across the North Sea to Britain. Old English Angel, Angul, modern German Angeln, the region of the Danish peninsula between the Flensburg Fjord and the River Schlei, south of the modern Danish frontier. From the west coast of the peninsula, it is no very great distance to the island of Heligoland. In another place, Angol is given as the Gnomish equivalent of Eriolo, which names are said to be those of the region of the northern part of the great lands, between the seas whence Eriol came. On these names, see further under Eriol in the appendix on names. It is not to be thought that these notes represent in all respects the story of Eriol as my father conceived it when he wrote The Cottage of Lost Play. In any case, it is said expressly there that Eriol means one who dreams alone, and that of his former names the story nowhere tells. But what is important is that according to the view that I have formed of the earliest conceptions, apparently the best explanation of the very difficult evidence, this was still the leading idea when it was written. Eriol came to Tolaresia from the lands to the east of the North Sea. He belongs to the period preceding the Anglo-Saxon invasions of Britain, as my father, for his purposes, wished to represent it. Later, his name was changed to Alfwine, Elf Friend. The mariner became an Englishman of the Anglo-Saxon period of English history, who sailed west over sea to Tolaresia. He sailed from England out into the Atlantic Ocean, and from this later conception comes the very remarkable story of Alfwine of England, which will be given at the end of the Lost Tales. But in the earliest conception, he was not an Englishman of England. England, in the sense of the land of the English, did not yet exist, for the cardinal fact, made quite explicit in extant notes of this conception, is that the Elvish isle to which Eriol came was England. That is to say, Tolaresia would become England, the land of the English, at the end of the story. Coromas, or Cotirion, the town in the centre of Tolaresia, to which Eriol comes in The Cottage of Lost Play, would become in after days Warwick, and the elements Cor and War were etymologically connected. Footnote: the great tower or Tirion that Ingil, son of Inwe, built, and the great tower of Warwick Castle are not identified, but at least it is certain that Coromas had a great tower because Warwick has one. End of footnote. Aral Minore, the land of elms, would be Warwickshire, and Tavrobel, where Eriol sojourned for a while in Tolaresia, would afterwards be the Staffordshire village of Great Heywood. None of this is explicit in the written tales, and is only found in notes independent of them, but it seems certain that it was still present when The Cottage of Lost Play was written, and indeed, as I shall try to show later, underlies all the tales. The fair copy that my mother made of it was dated February 1917. From 1913 until her marriage in March 1916, she lived in Warwick, and my father visited her there from Oxford. After their marriage, she lived for a while at Great Heywood, east of Safford, since it was near the camp where my father was stationed, and after his return from France, he was at Great Heywood in the winter of 1916-17. Thus the identification of Tolaresian Tavrobel with Great Heywood cannot be earlier than 1916, and the fair copy of The Cottage of Lost Play, and quite possibly the original composition of it, was actually done there. In November 1915, my father wrote a poem entitled Cortirion Among the Trees, which was dedicated to Warwick. Footnote: this poem is given in three different texts, a poem written at Etaples in the Pas-de-Calais in June 1916 and entitled The Lonely Isle, is explicitly addressed to England. See Letters, page 437, note 4 to letter 43, end of footnote. To the first fair copy of the poem there is appended a prose introduction as follows. Now, on a time, the fairies dwelt in the lonely isle, after the great wars with Melko and the ruin of Gondolin, and they builded a fair city amidmost of that island, and it was girt with trees. Now, this city they called Cortirion, both in memory of their ancient dwelling of Cor in Valinor, and because this city stood also upon a hill, and had a great tower, tall and grey, that Ingil, son of Inwe, their lord, let raise. Very beautiful was Cortirion, and the fairies loved it, and it became rich in song and poesy and the light of laughter. But on a time the great faring forth was made, and the fairies had rekindled once more the magic sun of Valinor, but for the treason and faint hearts of men. But so it is that the magic sun is dead, and the lonely isle drawn back unto the confines of the great lands, and the fairies are scattered through all the wide, unfriendly pathways of the world. And now men dwell even on this faded isle, and care naught, or know naught, of its ancient days. Yet still there be some of the Eldar and the Noldoli of old, who linger in the island, and their songs are heard about the shores of the land that once was the fairest dwelling of the immortal folk. Footnote: for the distinction between Eldar and Noldoli, see the Music of the Ainur, side 2. End of footnote. And it seems to the fairies, and it seems to me who know that town and have often trodden its disfigured ways, that autumn and the falling of the leaf is the season of the year when maybe, here or there, a heart among men may be open, and an eye perceive how is the world's estate fallen from the laughter and the loveliness of old. Think on Cortirion and be sad, yet is there not hope? Both here and in the cottage of Lost Play there are allusions to events still in the future when Eriol came to Tol Eressia. And though the full exposition and discussion of them must wait until the end of the tales, it needs to be explained here that the faring forth was a great expedition made from Tol Eressia for the rescue of the elves who were still wandering in the great lands, compare Lindo's words, until such time as they fare forth to find the lost families of the kindred. At that time, Tol Eressia was uprooted by the aid of Ulmo from the sea bottom and dragged near to the western shores of the great land. In the battle that followed, the elves were defeated and fled into hiding in Tol Eressia. Men entered the isle, and the fading of the elves began. The subsequent history of Tol Eressia is the history of England, and Warwick is disfigured Cortirion, itself a memory of ancient Cor, the later Tirion upon Tuna, city of the elves in Aman. In the Lost Tales, the name Cor is used both of the city and the hill. Inwe, referred to in the Cottage of Lost Play as king of all the Eldar when they dwelt in Kor, is the forerunner of Ingwe, king of the Vanyar elves in the Silmarillion. In a story told later to Eriol in Tol Eressia, Inwe reappears as one of the three elves who went first to Valinor after the Awakening, as was Ingwe in the Silmarillion. His kindred and descendants were the Inwir, of whom came Merili Turinki, the Lady of Tol Eressia. See the Music of the Ainur, side 2. Lindo's references to Inwe's hearing the lament of the world, i.e. of the great lands, and to his leading the Eldar forth to the lands of men, are the germ of the story of the coming of the hosts of the West to the assault on Thangorodrim. The host of the Valar prepared for battle, and beneath their white banners marched the Vanyar, the people of Ingwe. The Silmarillion, page 251. Later in the tales, it is said to Eriol by Meril I Turinki that Inwe was the eldest of the elves, and had lived yet in majesty had he not perished in that march into the world. But Ingil, his son, went long ago back to Valinor and is with Manwe. In the Silmarillion, on the other hand, it is said of Ingwe that he entered into Valinor in the beginning of the days of the elves, and sits at the feet of the powers, and all elves revere his name. But he came never back, nor looked again upon Middle-earth. The Music of the Ainur, side 2. Lindo's words about the sojourn of Ingil in Tol Eressia after many days, and the interpretation of the name of his town, Koromas, as the resting of the exiles of Kor, refer to the return of the Eldar from the great lands after the war on Melko, Melkor, Morgoth, for the deliverance of the enslaved Noldoli. His words about his father, Valwe, who went with Noldorin to find the gnomes, refer to an element in this story of the expedition from Kor. Footnote: a little light on Lindo's references to the ringing of the gong on the shadowy seas and the sleeper in the Tower of Pearl will be shed when the story of Earendel is reached at the end of the tales. End of footnote. End of side 1. To continue, turn the cassette over. Side 2. The Book of Lost Tales, part 1, continuing with the Cottage of Lost Play on page 27. It is important to see, then, that if my general interpretation is correct, in the Cottage of Lost Play, Eriol comes to Tol Eressia in the time after the fall of Gondolin and the march of the elves of Kor into the great lands for the defeat of Melko, when the elves, who had taken part in it, had returned over the sea to dwell in Tol Eressia, but before the time of the faring forth and the removal of Tol Eressia to the geographical position of England. This latter element was soon lost in its entirety from the developing mythology. Of the cottage itself, it must be said at once that very little light can be cast on it from other writings of my father's, for the entire conception of the children who went to Valinor was to be abandoned almost without further trace. Later in the Lost Tales, however, there are again references to Olore Male. After the description of the hiding of Valinor, it is told that at the bidding of Manwë, who looked on the event with sorrow, the Valar Orome and Lórien devised strange paths from the great lands to Valinor, and the way of Lórien's devising was Olore Male, the path of dreams. By this road, when men were yet but new wakened on the earth, the children of the fathers of men came to Valinor in their sleep. The Hiding of Valinor, side 8. There are two further mentions in tales to be given in part 2. The teller of the tale of Tinuviel, a child of Marvanwa Chalieva, says that she saw Tinuviel and her mother with her own eyes when journeying by the way of dreams in long past days, and the teller of the tale of Turambar says that he trod Olore Male in the days before the fall of Gondolin. There is also a poem on the subject of the cottage of Lost Play, which has many of the details of the description in the prose text. This poem, according to my father's notes, was composed at 59 St. John's Street, Oxford, his undergraduate lodgings, on the 27th to the 28th of April, 1915, when he was 23. It exists, as is constantly the case with the poems, in several versions, each modified in detail from the preceding one, and the end of the poem was twice entirely rewritten. I give it here first in the earliest form, with changes made to this in notes at the foot of the page, and then in the final version, the date of which cannot be certainly determined. I suspect that it was very much later, and may indeed have been one of the revisions made to old poems when the collection The Adventures of Tom Bombadil, 1962, was being prepared, though it is not mentioned in my father's correspondence on that subject. The original title was You and Me, and the Cottage of Lost Play, with an Old English rendering, Tate Husinka Eran Gamenes, which was changed to Marvanwa Chalieva, the Cottage of Lost Play. In the final version, it is The Little House of Lost Play, Marvanwa Chalieva. The verse lines are indented as in the original texts. You and Me and the Cottage of Lost Play. You and me, we know that land, and often have been there, in the long old days, old nursery days, a dark child and a fair. Was it down the paths of firelight dreams, in winter cold and white, or in the blue-spun twilight hours of little early tucked-up beds in drowsy summer night, that you and I got lost in sleep and met each other there? Your dark hair on your white nightgown, and mine was tangled fair. We wandered shyly hand in hand, or rollicked in the fairy sand, and gathered pearls and shells in pails, while all about the nightingales were singing in the trees. We dug for silver with our spades, by little inland sparkling seas, then ran ashore through sleepy glades, and down a warm and winding lane, we never, never found again, between high whispering trees. The air was neither night nor day, but faintly dark with softest light, when first there glimmered into sight the cottage of Lost Play. 'Twas builded very, very old, white, and thatched with straws of gold, and pierced with peeping lattices that looked toward the sea, and our own children's garden plots were there, our own forget-me-nots, red daisies, cress and mustard, and blue nemophily. Oh, all the borders, trimmed with box, were full of favourite flowers, of phlox, of larkspur, pinks and hollyhocks, beneath a red may tree. And all the paths were full of shapes, of tumbling, happy, white-clad shapes, and with them you and me. And some had silver watering-cans, and watered all their gowns, or sprayed each other. Some laid plans to build them houses, fairy towns, or dwellings in the trees. and some were clambering on the roof, some crooning, lonely and aloof, and some were dancing fairy rings and weaving pearly daisy strings or chasing golden bees. But here and there a little pair with rosy cheeks and tangled hair debated quaint old childish things, and we were one of these. And why it was tomorrow came and with his grey hand led us back, and why we never found the same old cottage or the magic track that leads between a silver sea and those old shores and gardens fair where all things are that ever were, we know not, you and me. Footnote. Debated quaint old childish things. This seems to echo the lines of Francis Thompson's poem, Daisy. Two children did we stray and talk, wise, idle, childish things. My father acquired the works of Francis Thompson in 1913 and 1914. End of footnote. You and me, we know that land, was changed to you and I, we know that land. In the long old days, old nursery days, was changed to in the long old days, the shining days. Or rollicked in the fairy sand was changed to, or rollicked in the golden sand. We never, never found again was changed to, that now we cannot find again. The air was neither night or day was changed to, the air was neither night nor day. 'Twas builded very, very old was changed to, new built it was, yet very old. Oh, all the borders trimmed with box was changed to, and all the borders trimmed with box, and with them you and me was changed to, that laughed with you and me. To build them houses, fairy towns, was changed to build them houses, little towns. Debated quaint old childish things was changed to, debated ancient childish things. Lines 58, and why it was tomorrow came, through line 65, we know not, you and me, were changed to, but why it was there came a time when we could take the road no more, though long we looked and high would climb, or gaze from many a seaward shore, to find the path between sea and sky, to those old gardens of delight, and how it goes now in that land, if there the house and gardens stand, still filled with children clad in white, we know not, you and I. That leads between a silver sea was changed to that leads between the sea and sky, and those old shores and gardens fair was changed to those old shores and gardens fair. We know not you and me was changed to we know not you and I. This is the final version of the poem, The Little House of Lost Play, Marvanwa Chalyeva. We knew that land once, you and I, and once we wandered there, in the long days now long gone by, a dark child and a fair. Was it on the paths of firelight thought in winter cold and white, or in the blue-spun twilight hours of little early tucked-up beds in drowsy summer night, that you and I in sleep went down to meet each other there, your dark hair on your white nightgown, and mine was tangled fair? We wandered shyly, hand in hand, small footprints in the golden sand, and gathered pearls and shells in pails, while all about the nightingales were singing in the trees. We dug for silver with our spades, and caught the sparkle of the seas that ran ashore to green-lit glades, and found the warm and winding lane that now we cannot find again between tall whispering trees. The air was neither night nor day, an ever eve of gloaming light, when first there glimmered into sight the little house of play. New built it was, yet very old, white, and thatched with straws of gold, and pierced with peeping lattices that looked toward the sea. And our own children's garden plots were there, our own forget-me-nots, red daisies, cress and mustard and radishes for tea. There all the borders, trimmed with box, were filled with favourite flowers, with phlox, with lupins, pinks and hollyhocks, beneath a red may tree. And all the gardens full of folk that their own little language spoke, but not to you and me. For some had silver watering cans and watered all their gowns, or sprayed each other. Some laid plans to build their houses, little towns, and dwellings in the trees. And some were clambering on the roof, some crooning lonely and aloof, some dancing round the fairy rings, all garlanded in daisy strings, while some upon their knees before a little white-robed king crowned with marigold would sing their rhymes of long ago. But side by side a little pair with heads together, mingled hair, went walking to and fro, still hand in hand. And what they said ere waking far apart them led, that only we now know. It is notable that the poem was called The Cottage, or The Little House of Lost Play, whereas what is described as the cottage of the children in Valinor near the city of Kor. But this, according to Vairi, side 1, the cottage of the play of sleep was not of lost play, as has wrongly been said in song among men. I shall not attempt any analysis or offer any elucidation of the ideas embodied in the cottages of the children. The reader, however he interprets them, will in any case not need to be assisted in his perception of the personal and particular emotions in which all was still anchored. As I have said, the conception of the coming of mortal children in sleep to the gardens of Valinor was soon to be abandoned in its entirety, and in the developed mythology there would be no place for it, still less for the idea that in some possible future day the roads through Arvalin to Valinor shall be thronged with the sons and daughters of men. Likewise, all the elfin diminutiveness soon disappeared. The idea of the cottage of the children was already in being in 1915, as the poem You and Me shows, and it was in the same year, indeed on the same days of April, that Goblin Feet, or Cumath ta Nichtjelfas, was written, concerning which my father said in 1971, I wish the unhappy little thing, representing all that I came so soon after to fervently dislike, could be buried forever. Footnote. He had been asked for his permission to include the poem in an anthology, as it had been several times previously. See Humphrey Carpenter, Biography, page 74, where a part only of the poem is printed, and also his bibliography, in the same place, year 1915. End of footnote. Yet it is to be observed that in early notes elves and men are said to have been of a size in former days, and the smallness and filminess and transparency of the fairies is an aspect of their fading, and directly related to the domination of men in the great lands. To this matter I shall return later. In this connection, the diminutiveness of the cottage is very strange, since it seems to be a diminutiveness peculiar to itself. Ariel, who has travelled for many days through Tolaresia, is astonished that the dwelling can hold so many, and he is told that all who enter it must be, or must become, very small. But Tolaresia is an island inhabited by elves. I give now 3 texts of the poem Cortirion Among the Trees, later The Trees of Cortirion. The very earliest workings, November 1915, of this poem are extant, and there are many subsequent texts. Footnote. According to my father's notes, the original composition dates from November the 21st to the 28th, 1915, and was written in Warwick on a week's leave from camp. This is not precisely accurate, since letters to my mother survive that were written from the camp on November the 25th and 26th, in the second of which he says that he has written out a pencil copy of Cortirion. End of footnote. The prose introduction to the early form has been cited on side 1. A major revision was made in 1937 and another much later. By this time it was almost a different poem. Since my father sent it to Rainer Unwin in February 1962 as a possible candidate for inclusion in The Adventures of Tom Bombadil, it seems virtually certain that the final version dates from that time. Footnote. In his letter my father said, The Trees is too long and too ambitious, and even if considered good enough, would probably upset the boat. End of footnote. I give the poem first in its pre-1937 form, when only slight changes had yet been made. In one of the earliest copies it bears a title in Old English, Cortirion Thera Beama on Medis, and is dedicated to Warwick, but in another the second title is in Elvish, the second word is not perfectly legible, Narquelion la blank tu I aldalin Cortirionwen, i.e. autumn among the trees of Cortirion. Cortirion Among the Trees. The first verses. A fading town upon a little hill, Old memory is waning in thine ancient gates, the robe gone grey, thine old heart almost still, the castle only frowning ever waits, and ponders how among the towering elms the gliding water leaves these inland realms, and slips between long meadows to the western sea, still bearing downward over murmurous falls one year and then another to the sea. And slowly thither have a many gone, since first the fairies built Cortyrion. A spiry town, upon a windy hill, with sudden winding alleys, shady walled, where even now the peacocks pace a stately drill, majestic, sapphirine and emerald, behold thy girdle of a wide champaign, sunlit and watered with a silver rain, and richly wooded with a thousand whispering trees that cast long shadows in many a bygone noon, and murmured many centuries in the breeze. Thou art the city of the land of elms, Alal Minore in the fairy realms. Sing of thy trees, old, old Cortyrion, thine oaks and maples with their tassels on, thy singing poplars and the splendid yews that crown thine aged walls and muse of sombre grandeur all the day, until the twinkle of the early stars is tangled palely in their sable bars, until the seven lampads of the silver bear swing slowly in their shrouded hair and diadem the fallen day. O tower and citadel of the world, when bannered summer is unfurled, most full of music are thine elms, a gathered sound that overwhelms the voices of all other trees. Sing then of elms, beloved Cortyrion, how summer crowds their full sails on, like clothed masts of verdurous ships, a fleet of galleons that proudly slips across long sunlit seas. The second verses. Thou art the inmost province of the fading isle, where linger yet the lonely companies. Still undespairing do they sometimes slowly file along thy paths with plaintive harmonies, the holy fairies and immortal elves that dance among the trees and sing themselves a wistful song of things that were and could be yet. They pass and vanish in a sudden breeze, a wave of bowing grass, and we forget their tender voices like wind-shaken bells of flowers, their gleaming hair like golden asphodels. Spring still hath joy, thy spring is ever fair among the trees, but drowsy summer by thy streams already stoops to hear the secret player pipe out beyond the tangle of her forest dreams the long thin tune that still do sing the elvish harebells nodding in a jacinth ring upon the castle walls. Already stoops to listen to the clear cold spell come up her sunny aisles and perfumed halls. A sad and haunting magic note, a strand of silver glass remote. Then all thy trees, old town upon a windy bent, do loose a long sad whisper and lament. For going are the rich-hued hours, the enchanted nights, when flitting ghost moths dance like satellites round tapers in the moveless air. And doomed already are the radiant dawns, the fingered sunlight dripping on long lawns, the odour and the slumbrous noise of meads, when all the sorrel flowers and plumed weeds go down before the scyther's share. Strange, sad October robes her dewy furs, in netted sheen of gold-shot gossamers, and then the wide umbraged elm begins to fail, her mourning multitudes of leaves go pale, seeing afar the icy shears of winter and his blue-tipped spears marching unconquerable upon the sun of bright All Hallows. Then their hour is done, and wanly borne on wings of amber pale, they beat the wide airs of the fading vale, and fly like birds across the misty meres. The third verses. Yet is this season dearest to my heart, most fitting to the little faded town, with sense of splendid pomps that now depart in mellow sounds of sadness, echoing down the paths of stranded mists. O gentle time, when the late mornings are bejewelled with rhyme, and the blue shadows gather on the distant woods. The fairies know thy early crystal dusk, and put in secret on their twilight hoods of grey and filmy purple, and long bands of frosted starlight sewn by silver hand. They know the season of the brilliant night when naked elms entwine in cloudy lace the Pleiades, and long-armed poplars bar the light of golden-rongered moons with glorious face. O fading fairies and most lonely elves, then sing ye to yourselves a woven song of stars and gleaming leaves. Then whirl ye with the sapphire-winged winds, then do ye pipe and call with heart that grieves, to somber men, remember what is gone, the magic sun that lit Cortirion. Now are thy trees, old, old Cortirion, seen rising up through pallid mists and wan, like vessels, floating vague and long afar down opal seas beyond the shadowy bar of cloudy ports forlorn. They leave behind forever havens thronged, wherein their crews awhile held feasting long and gorgeous ease, who now like windy ghosts are wafted by slow airs to empty coasts. There are they sadly glimmering borne across the plumless ocean of oblivion. There are thy trees become, Cortirion, and all their summer glory swiftly gone. The seven lampads of the silver bear are waxen to a wondrous flare that flames above the fallen year. Though cold thy windy squares and empty streets, though elves dance seldom in thy pale retreats, save on some rare and moonlit night, a flash, a whispering glint of white, yet would I never need depart from here. The last verse. I need not know the desert or red palaces where dwells the sun, the great seas or the magic isles, the pine woods piled on mountain terraces, and calling faintly down the windy miles, touches my heart no distant bell that rings in populous cities of the earthly king. Here do I find a haunting, ever-near content, set midmost of the land of withered elms, al minore of the fairy realms. Here, circling slowly in a sweet lament, linger the holy fairies and immortal elves, singing a song of faded longing to themselves. I give next the text of the poem as my father rewrote it in 1937 in the later of slightly variant forms, Cortirion Among the Trees, 1. O fading town upon an inland hill, old shadows linger in thine ancient gate, thy robe is grey, thine old heart now is still, thy towers silent in the mist await their crumbling end, while through the storied elms the gliding water leaves these inland realms, and slips between long meadows to the sea, still bearing downward over murmurous falls one day and then another to the sea. And slowly thither many years have gone, since first the elves here built Cortirion. O climbing town upon thy windy hill, with winding streets and alleys shady walled, where now untamed the peacocks pace in drill, majestic, sapphirine and emerald, amid the girdle of this sleeping land, where silver falls the rain, and gleaming stand the whispering host of old, deep-rooted trees that cast long shadows in many a bygone noon, and murmured many centuries in the breeze. Thou art the city of the land of elms, al minore in the fairy realms. Sing of thy trees, Cortirion, again. The beech on hill, the willow in the fen, the rainy poplars and the frowning yews, within thine aged courts that muse in sombre splendour all the day, until the twinkle of the early stars comes glinting through their sable bars, and the white moon climbing up the sky looks down upon the ghosts of trees that die slowly and silently from day to day. O lonely isle, here was thy citadel, ere bannered summer from his fortress fell. Then full of music were thine elms, green was their armour, green their helms, the lords and kings of all thy trees. Sing then of elms, renowned Cortirion, that under summer crowds their full sail on, and shrouded stand like masts of verdurous ships, a fleet of galleons that proudly slips across long sunlit seas. 2. Thou art the inmost province of the fading isle, where linger yet the lonely companies. Still undespairing, here they slowly file along thy paths with solemn harmonies, the holy people of an elder day, immortal elves, that singing fair and fey of vanished things that were and could be yet pass like a wind among the rustling trees, a wave of bowing grass, and we forget their tender voices like wind-shaken bells of flowers, their gleaming hair like golden asphodels. Once spring was here with joy, and all was fair among the trees, but summer, drowsing by the stream, heard trembling in her heart the secret player pipe out beyond the tangle of her forest dream, the long-drawn tune that elvish voices made for seeing winter through the leafy glade. The late flowers, nodding on the ruined walls, then stooping, heard afar that haunting flute, beyond the sunny aisles and tree-propped halls, for thin and clear and cold the note, as strand of silver glass remote. Then all thy trees, Cauterian, were bent, and shook with sudden whispering lament, for passing were the days and doomed the nights, when flitting ghost moths danced as satellites round tapers in the moveless air. And doomed already were the radiant dawns, the fingered sunlight drawn across the lawns, the odour and the slumberous noise of meads, where all the sorrel flowers and plumed weeds go down before the scyther's share, when cool October robed her dewy furs in netted sheen of gold-shot gossamers. Then the wide umbridged elms began to fail, their mourning multitude of leaves grew pale, seeing afar the icy spears of winter marching blue behind the sun of bright All Hallows. Then their hour was done, and wanly borne on wings of amber pale, they beat the wide airs of the fading vale, and flew like birds across the misty meres. 3. This is the season dearest to the heart, and time most fitted to the ancient town, with waning musics sweet that slow depart, winding with echoed sadness faintly down the paths of stranded mist. O gentle time, when the late mornings are begemmed with rhyme, and early shadows fold the distant woods. The elves go silent by, their shining hair they cloak in twilight under secret hoods of grey and filmy purple, and long bands of frosted starlight sewn by silver hands. And oft they dance beneath the roofless sky, when naked elms entwine in branching lace the seven stars, and through the boughs the eye stares, golden beaming in the round moon's face. O holy elves and fair immortal folk, you sing then ancient songs that once awoke under primeval stars before the dawn. You whirl then, dancing with the eddying wind, as once you danced upon the shimmering lawn in Elvenhome, before we were, before you crossed wide seas unto this mortal shore. Now are thy trees, old grey Cauterian, through pallid mists seen rising tall and wan, like vessels floating vague, and drifting far down opal seas, beyond the shadowy bar of cloudy ports forlorn, leaving behind forever havens loud, wherein their crews awhile held feasting proud and lordly ease, they now, like windy ghosts, are wafted by slow airs to windy coasts, and glimmering sadly down the tide are borne. There are thy trees become, Cauterian. The rotted raiment from their bones is gone. The seven candles of the silver wane, like lighted tapers in a darkened fane, now flare above the fallen year. Though court and street now cold and empty lie, and elves dance seldom neath the barren sky, yet under the white moon there is a sound of buried music still beneath the ground. When winter comes, I would meet winter here. I would not seek the desert or red palaces where reigns the sun, nor sail to magic isles, nor climb the hoary mountains' stony terraces, and tolling faintly over windy miles to my heart calls no distant bell that rings in crowded cities of the earthly kings. For here is heart's ease still and deep content, though sadness haunt the land of withered elms, al Alminore in the fairy realm, and making music still in sweet lament, the elves here holy and immortal dwell, and on the stones and trees there lies a spell. I give lastly the final poem in the second of two slightly different versions, composed, as I believe, nearly half a century after the first. The Trees of Cauterion, 1, al Alminore. O ancient city on a leaguered hill, old shadows linger in your broken gate, your stones are grey, Your old halls now are still, your towers silent in the mist await their crumbling end, while through the storied elms the river gliding leaves these inland realms and slips between long meadows to the sea. Still bearing down by weir and murmuring fall, one day and then another, to the sea. And slowly thither many days have gone, since first the Edain built Corterion. Corterion, upon your island hill, with winding streets and alleys shadow-walled, where even now the peacocks pace in drill majestic, saffron and emerald, once long ago amid this sleeping land of silver rain, where still year-laden stand in unforgetful earth the rooted trees that cast long shadows in the bygone noon and whispered in the swiftly passing breeze, once, long ago, queen of the land of elms, high city were you of the inland realms. Your trees in summer you remember still, the willow by the spring, the beech on hill, the rainy poplars and the frowning yews within your aged courts that muse in sombre splendour all the day, until the firstling star comes glimmering, and flittermice go by on silent wing, until the white moon, slowly climbing, sees in shadow fields the sleep-enchanted trees night-mantled all in silver grey. Al-Alminor, here was your citadel, ere bannered summer from his fortress fell. About you stood arrayed your host of elms, green was their armour, tall and green their helms, high lords and captains of the trees. But summer wanes. Behold, Corterion, the elms their full sail now have crowded on, ready to the winds, like masts amid the veil of mighty ships, too soon to sail to other days beyond these sunlit seas. 2. Narquelion. Al-Alminore, green heart of this isle, where linger yet the faithful companies, still undespairing here they slowly file down lonely paths with solemn harmonies. The fair, the firstborn in an elder day, immortal elves, who singing on their way of bliss of old and grief, though men forget, pass like a wind among the rustling trees, a wave of bowing grass, and men forget their voices calling from a time we do not know, their gleaming hair like sunlight long ago. A wind in the grass. The turning of the year, a shiver in the reeds beside the stream, a whisper in the trees, afar they hear, piercing the heart of summer's tangled dream, chill music that a herald piper plays, foreseeing winter and the leafless days. The late flowers, trembling on the ruined walls, already stoop to hear that elven flute. Through the woods, sunny aisles and tree-propped halls, winding amid the green with clear, cold note, like a thin strand of silver glass remote. The high tide ebbs, the year will soon be spent, and all your trees, Corterion, lament. At morn the whetstone rang upon the blade, at eve the grass and golden flowers were laid to wither, and the meadows bare. Now dimmed already comes the tardier dawn, paler the sunlight fingers creep across the lawn, the days are passing. Gone like moths, the nights when white wings, fluttering, danced like satellites round tapers in the windless air. Lammas is gone, the harvest moon has waned, summer is dying that so briefly reigned, now the proud elms at last begin to quail, their leaves, uncounted, tremble and grow pale, seeing afar the icy spears of winter march to battle with the sun. When bright All Hallows fades, their day is done, and borne on wings of amber wan, they fly in heedless winds beneath the sun. Alas, Corterion, queen of elms, alas! This season best befits your ancient town with echoing voices sad that slowly pass, winding with waning music faintly down the paths of stranded mist. O fading time! When morning rises late, all hoar with rime, and early shadows veil the distant woods. Unseen the elves go by, their shining hair they cloak in twilight, under secret hoods of grey, their dusk-blue mantles gird with bands of frosted starlight sewn by silver hands. At night they dance beneath the roofless sky, when naked elms entwine in branching lace the seven stars, and through the boughs the eye stares down, cold gleaming in the high moon's face. O elder kindred, fair immortal folk, you sing now ancient songs that once awoke under primeval stars before the dawn. You dance like shimmering shadows in the wind, as once you danced upon the shining lawn of Elvenholm, before we were, before you crossed wide seas unto this mortal shore. Now are your trees, old grey Cortyrian, through pallid mists seen rising tall and wan, like vessels vague that slowly drift afar out to empty seas beyond the bar of cloudy ports forlorn. Leaving behind forever havens loud, wherein their crews a while held feasting proud in lordly ease, they now like windy ghosts are wafted by cold airs to friendless coasts, and silent down the tide are borne. There has your realm become, Cortyrian, stripped of its raiment and its splendour gone, like lighted tapers in a darkened fane. The funeral candles of the silver wane now flare above the fallen year. Winter is come. Beneath the barren sky the elves are silent, but they do not die. Here, waiting, they endure the winter fell and silence. Here I too will dwell. Cortyrian, I will meet the winter here. 4. Metagne. I would not find the burning domes and sands where reigns the sun, nor dare the deadly snows, nor seek in mountains dark the hidden lands of men long lost, to whom no pathway goes. I heed no call of clamant bell that rings iron-tongued in the towers of earthly kings. Here on the stones and trees there lies a spell of unforgotten loss, of memory more blessed than mortal wealth. Here undefeated dwell the folk immortal under withered elms, al Alminore once in ancient realms. Footnotes. Narquelion. With the name Narquelion, which appears also in the title in Elvish of the original poem, compare Narquelie, sun fading, name of the 10th month in Quenya, The Lord of the Rings, Appendix D. Hrivion. Compare Hrive, winter, The Lord of the Rings, Appendix D. Metagne. Metagne contains meta, ending, as in ambar meta, the ending of the world, the return of the king, 6, 5. End of footnotes. I conclude this commentary with a note on my father's use of the word gnomes for the Noldor, who in the lost tales are called Noldoli. He continued to use it for many years, and it still appeared in earlier editions of The Hobbit. Footnote, in Chapter 3, A Short Rest, swords of the high elves of the west replaced swords of the elves that are now called gnomes, and in Chapter 8, Flies and Spiders, the phrase, there the light elves and the deep elves and the sea elves went and lived for ages, replaced there the light elves and the deep elves, or gnomes, and the sea elves lived for ages. End of footnote. In a draft for the final paragraph of Appendix F to The Lord of the Rings, he wrote, I have sometimes, not in this book, used gnomes for Noldor and gnomish for Noldorin. This I did, for whatever Paracelsus may have thought, if indeed he invented the name, to some gnome will still suggest knowledge. Footnote. Two words are in question. One, Greek gnome, thought, intelligence, and in the plural, maxims, sayings, whence the English word gnome, a maxim or aphorism, and adjective gnomic, and two, the word gnome, used by the 16th century writer Paracelsus,